I'm David Schreiner Khan, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep people stuck. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Steve Gordon. Steve is the author of the book Unstoppable Referrals and the publisher of The Unstoppable CEO, the leadership journal for growing firms. He's the editor of three business newsletters and has published hundreds of articles on marketing and selling high-ticket products and services in high-trust transactions. At age 28, Steve became the CEO of an engineering consulting firm. 12 years later, after growing that firm's revenue by 10 times, he started his second business, consulting one-on-one with businesses across 30 industries, including manufacturing, professional services, construction, and consulting, to design sales, marketing, and referral systems for high-ticket, high-trust products and services. Steve, welcome to the show.
David, really great to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Pleasure. So in your book, you write about the concept of a referral kit, which I think is an interesting way to look at and approach referrals. What is a referral kit, and how can it help you smash the plateau?
Sure. Yeah, that's probably a great place to start. So a referral kit in our world is really just a way to package up information that you would likely share with a potential client at some point during the sales process, and package it up in a way that it can be delivered to them without you having to be kind of belly to belly across the table. Because what we found is that for prospects, unless they're really ready to whip the checkbook out and sign up with you right now, that belly to belly interaction, that sitting in an office, you know, across the desk from you, that's a scary environment for a potential client, even a very sophisticated potential client. And if we can lower the barrier in that first interaction that you have with them, make it a low commitment, sort of high value type of interaction, then we find that it's a whole lot easier to get referred. So in the book, I talk about creating a referral kit, and really what you do is you take the key things that you would communicate with that prospective client about, and you package them up in a way that they can be delivered really easily. And there are a lot of different formats that our clients have used over the years. You know, you might package it up into a little report or maybe a short book. You might do it as a presentation, you know, and deliver it in a live seminar or a webinar, any number of formats. But that's essentially what it is. You're taking information you would maybe otherwise convey one-on-one that helps educate that prospect about the problems that they have, the consequences of those problems, because we find really that clients don't spend money to solve problems. They really spend money to alleviate consequences, because we've all got problems that we aren't willing to spend a dime to solve. It's just when it gets really painful and the consequences are great that we want to solve that problem. So you want to deal with the problems, the consequences of those problems, both known to the prospect and unknown, and then give them a peek at the solution and show them the success that others have had. And that's really what we put into a referral kit. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So what's a good example of a referral kit for, in particular, for a business that has a high amount of trust that needs to be developed in order for the relationship to get started?
Yeah, sure. So we work with quite a number of financial advisors, financial planners, and they're certainly in one of those businesses where you've got to have a ton of trust, right? You're giving them sort of some control or influence over your life savings. And so often what they will do is they'll put together a short little book. An example is a client we had who was really focused on working with doctors, and specifically with doctors who were right at that transition point where they're transitioning out of their training and going into private practice. And if you know anything about the medical profession, that for doctors, that's a time when they're kind of going from being overworked and relatively poor to moving into private practice and maybe not working quite so hard and also coming into a fairly high salary fairly quickly. And they've got a lot of debt from medical school. So he listed out from all of the clients that he'd worked with that were in that sort of stage in their careers, all of the challenges and different scenarios that he'd helped with, and he made them, you know, anonymous so that he wasn't revealing anything personal. And he put them into these short little stories, 1 to 2 page little stories about here was the situation and here was what the solution looked like for that situation, and put it into a short book. And the book was, to be honest, calling it a book was being a little bit generous, but it was about 25 pages in book format. Well, if you put that into Microsoft Word, you're talking about like 12 pages. You know, hard to call it a book, but you know, we put it in book format. And so he had all that packaged up, and he had all of these examples which really resonated with the type of client that he was trying to attract. And you know, you couldn't find a doctor who was in that stage of their career who, you know, wouldn't see themselves in at least several of those scenarios, because the problems were all very common. And he used that as a way to educate those physicians about the challenges that they were facing, and maybe they didn't even realize they were facing them yet. And then show them that, well, they're relatively, you know, simple solutions to these. And the ultimate solution, of course, was to go and consult with this financial planner and have him sort of write a financial prescription for them going forward. And so that's an example of how we package up that information and format. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And in this case, what kind of results did this professional end up achieving?
Yeah, so it's funny. He went out and we were on one of our coaching calls, and he said, you know, I've got my biggest physician client. This guy's been with me for years since the beginning. He's coming in after our call today, and at this point, we didn't have his book back. It wasn't back from being published, but we had a draft, and we knew we were about a week or two away. And he said, well, what can I do? I know we don't have the book yet. What can we do? And I said, well, here, just do this. Go to this guy happened to be in oncology. And I said, go to the oncology department of the hospital. Get the list of all of the other doctors on their website that are in oncology and print that out. Print 2 copies of it. And when your client comes in, after you've had your meeting, he's happy, he's thanked you, just say, you know, doc, we've worked on these problems for you. We've gotten these solved. You've told me time and time again how thankful you are that we've been able to get this squared away for you so that your family's pretty well set. And, you know, I know you work with a lot of doctors who maybe aren't as fortunate. They haven't gone through a process like we've gone through. And you know that I focus on working with doctors, and I'm really passionate about helping physicians through this stage, this transition that they're going through. In fact, I just finished writing a book, and I go through all of the different scenarios that I've seen throughout all my years of experience. And the book's not ready yet. It'll be done in about a week. And I know that there are doctors you're working with right now who would benefit from reading this. And, you know, we may do business, we may not do business. I don't really care. I just want to get this out into the hands of as many people as possible. And I've kind of done my homework. I've printed off a list from the hospital website of all the doctors that work in that department. And he handed the guy the list, and he handed him a highlighter. He said, who do you think on this list should get a copy of this book? I'd like to send it to them as a gift from you once they come in. And this guy had never referred him before in all the years they'd worked together. He always felt a little uncomfortable with it. Well, the doctor sat there and he highlighted off 11 names. And I get an email about, you know, hour and a half or so, 2 hours after my call with this client. And the subject line of the email is 11. And I open it up and go, that's how many referrals I just got doing what you told me to do. And the key that flipped the switch there from having a client that never referred before and always kind of resisted it when it was brought up, to now referring 11 people instantly, is having a really easy, low risk, low commitment, very first step. See, what we did there was we aligned the doctor's interest, which is helping the people that he knows, helping people that are in his network, doing some good, right? We aligned that with our client, the financial advisor's interest, which was getting clients. And we also aligned it with the prospect's interest in, you know, who the person that's going to receive that book, because they may be facing some of these problems and they want to learn a little bit more about it in a way that doesn't put them in a sales situation immediately. And when we line all of that up, this whole game becomes really, really easy.
Mm. So, yeah. So it seems to me that having that low risk first step for somebody who can be the referral source is really important. One of the questions that comes to my mind for professionals like the one you mentioned that have high trust offerings, and particularly for those that have high priced offerings, is in this process where you're creating something that you can use as an educational tool and an introductory mechanism, there are probably additional items that might require a little more work on the service provider's part, and in some cases perhaps some small amount of time on the service provider's part to get in front of a prospect. Where do you draw the line between what you're creating as a marketing tool that you're investing time or money in versus what you offer as a paid service or paid product?
Well, you know, we get that question a lot, and it usually sounds something like, you know, I don't want to give away, you know, everything that I know. Then why would they need me? And there is a balance there, but the real truth of the matter is, for most professionals, if you know you've been to school and you learned how to you know do a particular thing, you know, in this case, if it's a financial advisor or a doctor or an attorney or somebody like that, you know, they've been to a significant amount of school. They've learned a lot in that process. Then they've been practicing in whatever profession that they're in for some number of years, and they've gained immensely more knowledge and experience and expertise over that time. And I really challenge anybody who's gone through that to try and put all of that expertise into any kind of a container. I don't think you can give it all away. I just think there's too much there. And even if you could, the prospects that would take that and go, oh, okay, I could go do it myself. Those are not prospects. Those are do-it-yourselfers. And they're not going to pay, ultimately. The person that you want as a client, the one that's going to pay a premium to get help, is one that could intellectually figure it all out, but still wants an expert guide along the way. They're really buying leadership more than anything else. And you can demonstrate your leadership by packaging that information up and publishing it. And if you think about it, if you look around society, who do we recognize as leaders? We recognize people who will write. So authors are often recognized as leaders in their field. We recognize people who will stand in front of a room and speak, and they're recognized as leaders. And you really want to put yourself in that same grouping. Now, when we're working with a client to take them through this process, normally what we will do is we'll tell them, okay, you know, there are really five parts that you want to put into your referral kit, four main parts, and then kind of an extra bonus. And one of them is the solution to whatever problem that your clients typically have. You don't need to give them the whole solution, but you want to give them kind of the first step, the vision of what the solution might be. And often that's more than enough. And if a prospect is in the early stages of trying to figure out, you know, what their challenge is, sometimes they don't need any more than that. If you gave them the whole solution, it's sort of too much too soon. So that's really how we kind of draw that line, is we really just focus on getting them moving in the direction of the ultimate solution, and understanding that the full fulfillment of it is coming and working with that business.
Yeah, I think you've also made a really important distinction when you're talking about high ticket, high trust products and services, that the kind of client that you should be looking for is not the do-it-yourself client.
No, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, somebody with that mindset, and that's what it's just a way of thinking, is not ever going to want to and feel happy about paying someone else to do it for them. They're just wired to do it themselves, and that's totally fine. There's 7 billion people on the planet. There's not a business on the planet that can serve all of them. So if you just simply come to the realization that there are more than enough potential clients to go work with, then you can let the do-it-yourselfers go. Where people get into trouble, and we see this a lot, is they want to try and convince everybody, even the ones that aren't really kind of already inclined to get help. And that's just a difficult way to do business.
Yeah. So are there things that you should include in your referral kit that will essentially weed out those who are the do-it-yourselfers?
Yeah, you can. The most important thing is you want to put a really clear way for the right prospects to take a next step. And the do-it-yourselfers won't take the next step. Because the next step is where we introduce that belly-to-belly. Because most of the people we work with, when you're selling at a high price, at some point you're going to have that personal interaction. This isn't selling a 99-cent song on iTunes where it can all be done virtually and there's no human interaction. For the people we work with, they've got to get that one-on-one time with that potential client. But we want them, by the time they get there, to have already gotten to the point where they believe that this company that they're about to hire is the solution for them. And that's the purpose of the referral kit, is to tee up that one-on-one meeting so that it's very, very easy and there's not a lot of friction there. And you've already built up some trust and some authority and expertise, which is what most people try and do in that first meeting, which is, you know, it's one of the reasons that sales meetings can be a little uncomfortable for both sides, because you've got somebody who is really trying to build enough trust so they can quickly sell something, and you got somebody on the other side who doesn't know enough yet and doesn't have enough trust, and it's kind of a whole little convoluted dance that happens most of the time, and unless you're very, very good at doing that, usually leaves the prospect with the wrong feeling, and it frustrates the heck out of you as the person trying to sell. So our approach is, let's take care of as much of that upfront as humanly possible. And so in the referral kit, we want to start off addressing the main big problem that you solve, that your prospects have, and in terms that they would use, not necessarily in the terms you would use, because in every business, we sort of have this kind of inside baseball language that we use. And we want to avoid that. We want to use plain English and speak in ways that our prospects speak. And we want to look at the problems that they face. And oftentimes we'll want to look at the things that they aspire to, that they want to achieve, but they can't achieve without getting help. And we also maybe want to address some of the questions that they have about their situation typically. And those often are, you know, when you get it further into the sales process, those are what we might call objections. But if we can address them as just, you know, kind of question and answer up front, you can eliminate a lot of those objections that would pop up later and derail someone getting the solution that they need. So that's the first piece. The second piece is, we want to then really take that problem, or not having, you know, that achievement that they want, and talk about the consequences of that. So what does that mean in their everyday life, whether it's business or personal? And how does that manifest itself? And there might be a number of different ways that it manifests commonly in the potential clients that you work with. And you want to highlight to them what those consequences are. Sometimes they know what they are because they're feeling them. Sometimes they're hidden. And there's consequences that if they don't take action on this problem that they're aware of, there's a consequence over here that's waiting to jump out and get them. And you can build a great deal of trust by just being open and honest and saying, look, you don't know it yet, but here's what's coming your way. You need to be aware of this. So that's the second piece, is you want to address those consequences. Then once you've done that, Now their mind is in the right place and you can begin to share with them what a solution may be. If you start with a solution, which is what most people want to do, the brain really isn't designed for that. Our brains are hardwired to look for problems and threats. And if a solution shows up that doesn't fit a problem or threat that we're already thinking about, then our brain says, okay, I don't need that right now. Okay, well, I'll let it go. We want to work with the brain here, and we want to give them that problem, the consequence, and then show them that first step of the solution. So that's the third piece. And then the next thing, and this is really critical, you want to show them how to take a next step with you. So you've taken them through this process where you've educated them about the problem, about the consequences, you've shown them a little bit about the solution, and we can't leave them hanging because that would be inhumane. So we want to tell them, all right, well, if you want to go deeper, if you really want to get this problem solved, the next best step most of the time is we need to have a one-on-one meeting where I can sit down and we can go through your specific situation and I can ask you questions about it. We can diagnose what's really going on, and then we can tailor the solution to you. And in high ticket sales, that's almost always the process that's going to happen. And so you want to tell them how to do that. And it has to be more than just a sales meeting. It has to be something where they perceive they're actually going to get value out of that meeting with you. And then the fifth piece, which is a bonus, and in some industries you can use these, in some industries because of regulations you can't, but if you can use testimonials and case studies and proof, you absolutely want to do that because that gives that potential client that kind of look in the mirror experience where they go, oh yeah, there's somebody just like me facing the exact problem that I was facing or that I am facing, and that's how they solved it. And of course, that's how they solved it part is working with you. So those are the five parts that we work with our clients to put into their referral kits.
Steve, what is it in your own background that made you realize that this process is so important?
Well, you know, it's interesting. And in the intro, you mentioned the first business that I ran. And we worked completely by referral in that business. We did a little bit of advertising and it didn't work very well. And we learned some very expensive lessons, but all of our best clients came from referral. At that point, we had no idea what was making the phone ring one day versus not ring the next day. And so, but we had done fairly well. When I got out of engineering and began working with other firms and helping them attract clients, I did a series of workshops on referral marketing, and this is back in 2012. And we had about 300 people come through those workshops, all business owners, and we were teaching what I would call sort of the you know, tried and true strategy for referrals, which boils down to two things. The first is you have to ask a lot. You know, ask every client every time you interact with them. I mean, you've probably heard that advice. Everybody listening's probably heard that advice, and it's not bad advice because it does work if you do it. And then you've got to follow up with them for a really long time, and that's not bad advice either. Again, it works if you do it. So we did this whole series of workshops, had about 300 people come through the various workshops that we did, and about 6 months later, I went and followed up with 20 of them. And I just wanted to find out what had happened since then, what new progress they'd made. And I got to tell you, David, it was the most disappointing set of conversations I've ever had. I mean, not one of them had done anything with the advice that they had, you know, with the things that they had learned in those workshops. And they all admitted, you know I really need to be doing this. I know it's going to help. You know, they all said, well, we really have a problem attracting clients, but they just didn't want to go and ask. Really, that became the barrier. And so I started just really kind of trying to dissect what's going on here. Why do we have otherwise successful business people who want to get to the next level, who are stuck knowing that the solution is right there in front of them, but they aren't willing to take it? That my technical background says, well, that's not really a solution then. We've got to figure out a different way. And so we started looking at, okay, how can we change this process. And just really through experimentation with our own clients and with our own business, did we figure out that, you know what, if we put this piece in place called a referral kit, and if we take away the sales meeting, because if you think about the sort of traditional way a referral works, you know, I come to you and I say, hey, you know, David, do you know anybody that, you know, could use some help with their marketing? And your little internal mental Rolodex starts spinning and you've got to come up with a name. And I've asked you in a vague way to begin with, which most people do. So it's hard for you to think of a name on the spot. And then you've got to think about, well, not only do I need a name, but I need a name of somebody for whom, you know, there's a marketing need, right? And that, it just becomes really, really difficult. Well, then if you think of them, you come up with a name and you say, yep, I know it, Bob, my buddy Bob, he needs some help. So now you've got to set up Bob and I on this date. And this date is going to take place in what we call a sales meeting. And the only way that we're going to measure success, the three of us, of this referral is if Bob leaves with a lighter load in his wallet than when he came in. In other words, he's got to buy something, right? That's kind of the traditional way that we want to go about this referral process. And it adds just a ton of pressure. Putting that sales meeting as the first step is incredibly difficult. And the minute that you can replace it with a lower barrier to entry, it's much easier for the clients to do because they see, yeah, there's no risk here. Oh, I can share this little book, or I can send off an email and invite some people to a webinar, and then they can decide if this is a fit for them or not. And I'm not having to pressure them. Very easy for your clients and your referral partners to do. And, you know, I said in the earlier story about our client, the financial advisor, he went and immediately got 11 referrals from a client who had never referred him before over the many years they'd worked together. That's fairly typical of what we see once somebody puts the referral kit in place. They've been stuck for years not getting referrals, feeling like, you know, gosh, we just knock ourselves out. Our clients love us. They tell us all the time how good we, you know, how good we are and how happy they are. But we never get referrals, or it's so haphazard, we don't know why it's happening here and why it's happening there. And this kind of instantly opens that up for them. It's really fun to watch.
Mm. Now, is it important in this process for the service provider who's looking for the new business and asking for the referral? Is it important for that person to identify some prospects that the referral source knows or not?
It's helpful, and it certainly accelerates things if you can. And most of the time, if you know your clients, you can do it. And there are different ways that you can go about that. So we went through the one example where you know, our client was able to go on a public website and see the list of everybody that physician had worked with. And you may not always be in that kind of a situation. You know, for some of our clients, they know that, you know, so-and-so that they work with is involved in the local Rotary Club or the Chamber of Commerce, and they can go that way. Or if it's a larger business or regional business, maybe, you know, the executives are involved in a particular industry association where other members of the association would be good prospects. So there are ways to get at it that way. But what we're seeing more and more is that our clients are having success really sitting down and saying to one of their clients, look, I'd love to get, you know, this book or invite people to this presentation because I think it would be really beneficial. You know, I think they'd get a lot out of it. You know, the best way that I found to do that is if we just take a few minutes and maybe we can jump on a GoToMeeting and share screens, and you can either pull up your LinkedIn or pull up your Outlook contact list, and let's just go through that. We'll use that as the memory jogger, and you just tell me who would be a good fit and who wouldn't be a good fit. And what we have found is that the clients are very willing to do this. The client, you know, clients of our clients are very willing to do this. Especially when it's approached in the right way. We have a concept that we call purity of intent. So the idea is if you're approaching this from the perspective that I've created a way to share my knowledge and wisdom that doesn't cost me a whole lot of money or time because I've packaged it up, and now I want to get this out in the hands of as many people as possible so that it helps them. And I know that in doing that, I'll get more than enough business coming back to me, but I don't care if I get this out 100 times, I don't need to get 100 clients back. Yeah, that'd be great, but you know, I'll get more than my share. And if you approach it with that kind of intent, the clients will sense that. They'll see, hey, this guy's on a mission. I want to be part of that mission. And they'll be willing to help. If you go at it from a standpoint of, yeah, you know, can you really, you know, do you know anybody that might be a good client for me? You know, where it's all about you taking from the relationship, it's much harder to get help. So that's really one of the keys. And if you can give them that list, if you can do the prospecting for them, which is really as business owners, that's our role anyway, then this all becomes much, much easier.
That's great. So Steve, whom do you know personally who's been successful at smashing plateaus?
As I mentioned to you one other time, it's kind of hard to narrow that down because it seems like anybody that's been in business for very long has done that. But I'll tell you, the guy that comes to mind, and we're not related, but his last name is the same as mine, Dove Gordon, D-O-V, and then his last name is Gordon. And he has just done a phenomenal job. He and I are in the same business. We started out about the same time, and he has just very systematically gone around and he's built this little mastermind group of people and thought leaders in our business and in other related businesses. And it has become kind of this who's who of the industry. And to think that here's a guy who, if you look at, I mean, he's not located in the, he's from the US, he's from actually New York, lives in Israel now. So he's got this geographic challenge where he's not close to a lot of the people that he wanted to connect with, but he didn't let that stop him. And, you know, and he just has this phenomenal way of collecting these people together. It's been fun to watch. So he's the guy that comes to mind for me.
Sounds great. And Steve, what do we have to look forward to from you in the near future?
Well, David, we have just taken, after working with our clients on this referral process now for, gosh, we're going into our seventh year here. And we've spent the last few months really analyzing how our best clients think and how the least successful referral marketers that you know we've come across think. And it's created this really interesting contrast, these different mindsets. And we found that there are 8 different ways of thinking in the most successful people who are doing really well with referrals. And we boiled that down into a scorecard. So you can actually download this and kind of score yourself, see where you are now. And then you can see where maybe you want to grow to in the near future. And so that's kind of the thing I'm most excited about now, and be happy to share that with listeners if it would be a benefit for them.
Yeah. So how can listeners access that and how can they follow you and learn more about you?
Yeah, so the best way that they can get that is if they go to our website, go to unstoppableceo.net/smashing. We'll set that up just for listeners for the podcast, and they'll be able to download it there, and they can score it, and then if they want to, you know, find out about any of the other things that we do, we'd love to hear from them, and our website is unstoppableceo.net.
That's great. Well, Steve, thanks so much for taking the time to join us today on Smashing the Plateau. It's been a fascinating discussion about how you can really ramp up your game as a high-ticket, high-trust provider of products and services. And what you have learned and what you offer in this very, very simple but I think really remarkable way is a game changer for people who sell high ticket items. So I think it's great. And thanks so much for coming on and talking about it today.
David, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much. And look forward to talking to you soon.
My guest today has been Steve Gordon, the publisher and founder of The Unstoppable CEO. Thanks again, Steve, for joining us. Thank you for listening to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast produced by Tend Strategic Partners. I hope you enjoyed our discussion. Have you ever hit a plateau in your own life or career? If so, let's talk. It would be my pleasure to take you through one of our free half-hour discovery sessions, where we'll get to the bottom of what might be keeping you stuck and how to move things forward. Just give me a call at 212-731-0770. That's 212-731-0770. You never know what you might find out.